The first parish I served at after being ordained was in Hingham, Massachusetts, a lovely historic seaside town about 20 miles south of Boston. And one of the perks of this position was that it came with a house for the curate right next to the church. It was really half a house. The other half was rented out. It was a lovely house that was built in the mid-1800s and still had things like the original floorboards, which was cool, literally. The gaps between the boards were almost an inch wide in some places, letting every cold draft just run freely through the house. But despite some of its more annoying idiosyncrasies, we loved that house. Both our boys were born while we lived there. It was where I got my feet under me as a priest, and we got our feet under us as a family. And one of the most charming historical features of that house was its prevalence of fireplaces. We had four of them, one in each room on the first two floors, which made sense since the house predated central heating, and these fireplaces would have been the source of warmth for each room. However, due to some modernization they did at some point to attempt central air conditioning, the fireplaces were all sealed off. You couldn't actually burn wood in them, which with two babies crawling around this little house was probably for the best. But what then to do with them? They had great mantles for decorating, but the fireplace space itself was rather hard to fill. So Melinda, my wife, decided that absent a real fire, we would get one of those fake fires, a faux wooden display that you could plug in and the logs would light up and a tiny fan would blow wind into these little shiny pieces of tinsel, creating a crackling noise and this sense of a flickering fire. I was skeptical at first. But I must admit, it looked and sounded rather convincing. It didn't give off any heat, but it provided a warm ambiance to our sitting room. However, the most excited people about this new addition to our home were Vincent and Arthur, because the moment we turned it on, this fake fire became an object of supreme fascination. "What is that?" they would have said if they could have talked. But their eyes would widen and their mouths would hang open and they would just stare at it, awestruck. And we soon realized that this little fake fire was going to be worth every penny that we paid for it. It became our saving grace. Whenever they were getting fussy, we would turn it on and just let the stare at it for a while, and that usually made them forget what they were so upset about. It was like magic. This fire that blazed but did not consume, a source of profound awe. I always think of that little fake fire when reading this passage from Exodus about Moses and the burning bush. Because here, too, Moses finds himself awestruck by a fire that blazes but does not consume. It stops him in his tracks and causes him to step aside and to look. "I must turn aside," he says, "and look at this great sight and see why this bush is not burned up." It has caught his attention, astonished him. Wonder has seized him and now draws him in. And like the boys in front of that fake fire, I imagine his eyes growing wide and his mouth gaping open, him stopping all motion, forgetting everything he was doing, and just taking in this miraculous sight. And when he does, it is then that he encounters God. When was the last time you had an awesome experience? When did something make you stop and say, "Wow"? When did something take your breath away? I'm not just talking about admiration or interest. I'm talking about something so alluring that it grabbed you and demanded your attention and gave you that overwhelming feeling we call awe. Perhaps it was one of those big monumental moments, like looking up at the stars and contemplating the infinitude of the universe, or the moment you first fell in love or first held your child in your arms. Maybe it was as you stood on the shore and watched a sunrise swell the sky with purple and pink and orange. But maybe it was a smaller moment when you stopped to consider that blade of grass pushing its way up through the crack in the concrete, or witnessed a flock of sparrows dance above an open field, swooping and swaying in synchronized flight. Or maybe awe comes to you in a more philosophical way. Why is there something rather than nothing? How is it that I am capable of abstract thought? Or maybe it's more tactile. Consider your hand. How many synapses and muscles and tendons and bones have to work together in perfect harmony just for you to open and close your fist? Occasions for awe are everywhere. And as it was for Moses, this experience of awe is the root of faith. It is the reason we have religions. For in those moments when we have had those awesome experiences, the world opens up in a way that gives us a magnified appreciation for the vast web of being. It makes us take note of the fact that we are a part of all that is, which is thrilling. And at the same time gives us a sense of how small, not insignificant, but how small a piece we are of it, which is humbling. Awe is our introduction to the majesty and the mystery of existence. It makes us wonder, makes us aware that there is so much that stretches far beyond our comprehension, and that is what leads us into faith. None other than Albert Einstein made this same point. The most beautiful thing we can experience, he once said, is the mysterious. He to whom that emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. His eyes are closed. For to know what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and most radiant beauty, this knowledge, this feeling, is at the center of true religiousness. And that is because that which exists beyond our understanding, that great and awesome mystery, which is both overpowering and alluring, which can inspire both fear and fascination, make us feel alive, but also cause us to want to bow down in worship at the sheer greatness of it all, this is what we call God. God is what is who we encounter in these all-consuming moments of awe. And at the same time that those moments introduce us to God, they also make clear that that God can never be fully comprehended, which is what we see in the second half of this passage from Exodus. Moses asks God for God's name, and what is uttered are three Hebrew consonants that biblical scholars tell us actually have no clear meaning. Their best guess is that God is to be called Yahweh, which translates into something like, I am who I am, or I am that I am, or I will be what I will be. In other words, this passage says we don't really know the name for God. The answer is an unclear verbal phrase. God is being, God is motion and movement, and God eludes our ability to capture God in language. For when it comes to God, we run up against the limits of our linguistic abilities, the ceilings of our understanding, and we are left with a mystery. And that is essential to living the life of faith, not answers and explanations, but the awesome encounter with the great I am, the source and sustainer of all that is, who is greater than any words can name, and yet who we can still know and love. We're already about halfway through Lent, believe it or not. So you may already be set in your chosen disciplines for this season, holy people that you are. But if you're still casting about for a way to grow in your relationship with the one whom we call God, I have a suggestion. Over the next few weeks, try to have an awesome Lent. Because while awe cannot be manufactured, it can be cultivated. We can give our attention to virtually any aspect of our lives and find there a window into the numinous, an introduction to that mystery and majesty of a God who is bigger than we even know how to articulate or comprehend or name, and yet who is flowing through every fiber of existence, waiting for us to take notice. There are burning bushes everywhere, from the stars in the sky to the palm of your hand, even in sealed up fireplaces. So let your prayer be, wow. And let your life flow from there. And you will find that everywhere you walk is holy ground. Amen.